In this week's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with board-certified general surgeon, author, and functional medicine practitioner, Dr. Maria Assisian. Maria and I speak about her book, The Clear Skin Diet, and the connection between food sensitivities, skin conditions, immune function, and more. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Maria, and please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and now on to my conversation with Maria. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Maria Assisian. Welcome to the show, Maria.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Well, Maria, you are a board certified general surgeon. You're the owner of iLab Medicine. So you're a functional medicine practitioner, and you also have a wonderful educational YouTube channel. And so I'm really excited to speak with you about all things functional medicine, but also about your latest book, which is called The Clear Skin Diet. And of course, everything that pertains to diet really interests us and my listeners here. So yes, welcome. I am very much looking forward to discussing all these things. But before we get into the details of the book, maybe you can give us a little bit of a background of yourself and what caused you to become or work in functional medicine.
Yes, of course. And again, thank you for inviting me. And I appreciate your dedication to nutrition, fitness, and healthy lifestyle. That's just so important. That's honestly is the most important aspect of our health in general. And that's sort of, I will tie it in how I got into functional medicine. I have been a surgeon for a long, long time. And then I also have an interest in skin. And skin, so I have a skin clinic in the Cape Cod where I deal with a lot of skin cancer, but also with skin rashes and eczema, psoriasis, and a bunch of things. And it's interesting that both on the level of being a general surgeon, seeing, you know, rotten organs, because usually when you're a surgeon, you see sort of the end stage of the organ, because obviously a poor patient is in the operating room already. So on that level, you see something that's just so diseased, be it the bowel, gallbladder, or whatever it is. And the same thing, so to mirror that in my skin clinic, to see so many rashes, so many things just coming up, flare-ups of anything, could be eczema, acne, etc. So I just wanted to know why. And I always been very interested as to, so what is the initial cause? And I will not say anything, I think, original if I say that, unfortunately, a lot of us in conventional medicine, in Western medicine, we are very reactive. So we just wait, something happens, and then, oh, okay, we'll just fix this. So, and it's very frustrating, and not only for me, but many of my colleagues. So a lot of us share that, because I think that as we are progressing, as the whole society is moving along, that we, the medical community, also, we're allowed to be frustrated too, because we want to deliver better care. And that's how I got interested in functional medicine. And I got certified through the Institute of Functional Medicine. I'm sure you know Dr. Hyman, who is, you know, basically my mentor. He doesn't know that, but all of us who train there are his mentors. And I read his book initially, and then I realized that this really resonates with me. Like, I want to do better. So not only I want to prescribe something just to cover up a rash, for example, right? But I want to get to the core of it so it doesn't happen, or if it happens, it happens in a less severe form. So I got certified at the functional medicine, which is a pretty, it's a very strong program. So it requires a lot of studying and everything else. And then I treat now patients with that. I truly, truly enjoy that. I have my clinic, which is both in person and online, iLab MD, where we do consultations and testing if necessary. And then I wrote a book because it's sort of the crossroads of two things, skin and functional medicine. So there's a lot in common. So that's kind of my brief journey.
Wonderful. And yeah, I mean, your mission is just truly admirable as well. And I think it's so great when physicians recognize that often when they are in the treatment stage, it's and we don't want to say it's too late, but it's like, okay, we want to prevent things from happening. This is our new mission and shifting into that. That makes me very happy to hear. When I went to university and studied exercise science at first, I kind of got into the prevention or into first, it was the rehabilitation route. And I just felt myself be quite frustrated in that because you again, you have your repeat clients or patients and the third herniated disc and you're like, oh great. But eventually I then shifted into, okay, how can we prevent that from happening and just strengthen people up from the inside out and just shifting a bit more into nutrition. But little side story there. But anyway, I'm very excited that you have taken this step, this path. And so tell us a little bit about your book. The book is called The Clear Skin Diet. So why are there connections, or how is our gut microbiome, our food, our digestion, all that linked to our skin and to certain conditions like eczema, or how do you pronounce that? Acne, psoriasis, rashes, and all these kind of things.
And it's interesting, when I talk about my book, a lot of times I say the same thing, so I'm going to repeat that for your listeners, is that I could have named this book The Clear Skin Diet: Connection Between Food and Migraines, The Clear Skin Diet: Connection Between Food and Joints. So I happen to write the skin connecting, basically, skin, because I do a lot of it at my skin clinic, and the title is sort of it's a catchy title, and it goes with what I'm talking about because it's truly a diet as nutrition. So I basically, if I had more time, and if I wrote similar books on a variety of topics, the gist would be the same. So, what is the gist? And as you started mentioning, is that creams are fine. It's okay to use topical creams, and there is a place for that. However, when we are talking about chronic conditions, that's when the food comes in. So, let's say if you have a poison ivy, obviously, I wouldn't say it's because you ate something. That's stupid. That's just, a different type of thing. But when we have people, for example, I'm going to bring you an example of something that I see a lot, and it's very maybe underrated by the conventional medicine. It's a condition such as a chronic pruritus or chronic itching. And that drives people crazy because you would think, oh, okay, it's just itching. But if your whole body itches, then you can't sleep, you can't enjoy your life. It's also embarrassing because you have to constantly scratch yourself, et cetera. And some locations are not very modest locations. So, and it's a devastating condition. And I actually, in my clinic, especially now in functional medicine clinic, because people know that that's sort of one of my subspecialty, is that we need to get to the bottom of it because, and if you don't sleep well, you don't get enough sleep, then this affects everything. Then you're more apt to overeat or undereat. Actually, both are bad for you. You're more apt to be depressed, isolated, in a bad mood, because if your sleep is affected, then everything else is affected. So that's one of these core sort of our kind of lifestyle things that have to be fine, they have to be working, have to be functioning. So in my book, I write about that, and I write about all kinds of rashes because some rashes are not even diagnosed, because a lot of times people come in, I see it in my clinic all the time, they come in and say, I have a psoriasis. But most of the time they don't have a psoriasis. It's actually, most of the time, it's a form of eczema. It could be some kind of a dermatitis, which could be due to a variety of things such as allergic or irritant dermatitis. But we have to go deeper and ask, why is this person has this? Why is this person reacting to this? That's the interesting and fascinating part. And then we look at the foods and what foods do to us. So just to simplify, because sometimes people think about leaky gut in a way that it's very overwhelming. It's actually not overwhelming if you think about it. So if our gut is protecting us, then if we eat something and there is some bad food or like a toxin, something that potentially be toxin. So I don't mean that you eat a poison, but let's say you eat very fried food with trans fats. So trans fat is a poison for our body. It's a type toxin, so to speak. So you eat that, and then if you have a normal functioning gut, your gut would not let that absorb into your bloodstream. But if you don't, then it will absorb to a degree. And what happens, and that makes me sort of sad when I see our children, like when I see our children and teenage, they're eating all this food, and it's and sometimes they don't see any bad repercussions, and that's great because they have a strong body and their gut is still functioning normally. But give it some time, and unfortunately, then you have somebody who could be not even that old, let's say 25-year-old with chronic, I don't know, joint pain. We see people like that. We now talk about these younger people who have cancer. There's been epidemics of colon cancer in younger people. There's a lot of that, we talk about in medical and not only in actually in the media in general. So for somebody, it could be acne flare up, and for somebody, it could be migraine, it could be some neurological. So, and all of this, it's cumulative. So it's usually not like you eat one bad food like one time, once a year, and oh my God, immediately something bad happens. Thank God our body is much more resilient than that, right? So, but if you persistently eat bad foods, what happens? It's a, and I write it in my book that it's a bidirectional relationship. Because those bad foods make our gut leaky. So basically, it leaks the toxins into our bloodstream. We absorb it. But the leakier the gut gets, the more sensitive we become to other foods and to other things. So it's sort of like what is the first chicken or an egg type of thing. And there are other things that can cause leaky gut. So it's not only bad food is number one, poor diet, as we say, but there are also infections can trigger this. Like you started saying, stress. Stress is very important. Stress can trigger that. Surgery. Surgery is an ultimate stress. So even if you have a minor surgery, that can actually trigger leaky gut. There are so many situations that can trigger leaky gut, but number one, the most common one is persistently poor diet. And honestly, nobody is perfect because some people say that, oh, I eat healthy. But when you talk to them, when you actually say, so what did you eat? So you find out that they've eaten a lot of processed foods that they call healthy. So that's why it's fascinating in how bad food manifests, like how does leaky gut manifest? Because it's just that that's why I said the title of my book could have been anything, the connecting food with anything, and it would have been true. But in the skin, you see it better. So it's more satisfying when we have patients at our clinic and we do the consultations and they change their diet and everything. It's very satisfying to see improvement because actually we can see it as well because it's the skin. So yeah, so my book goes into a variety of mechanisms of how that happens.
Wonderful. And yeah, I mean, the skin is such a large organ where the body can express itself. So even if it's sometimes in smaller spots or so, but especially if it manifests in the face, of course we feel more self-conscious. We don't want to go amongst people, as you mentioned. So it has a lot of negative repercussions also from a mental state, from an emotional state. And that's why I think it's so important to address that. So, okay, we talked about what not to eat. You mentioned trans fats, you mentioned a lot of processed foods and so on. What are some other things, just in terms of like broad categories, that people should focus on? And I should have more of this and I should have less of this, because as you mentioned, nobody's perfect. If you eat something that's quote unquote in the bad bucket once a year, you're gonna be fine most likely. You might not feel so great for a day or two, but you're gonna be fine.
Yeah, that's actually a very good question, and it's a very sort of pertinent question because the whole concept of functional medicine that it's personalized. Yes, there are foods that are bad to for all of us, right? It's and honestly, most of us know them. They're fast foods, deep fried foods, like called fair foods, things like that. Those are most people know that. I think that it's hard to find somebody nowadays who doesn't know that. But now we're looking at other foods that could be both good and bad in some cases. Like, let's talk about eggs, for example. Eggs are a great food because they have tons of B12 and they have their protein. They're sources of a lot of good things. But yet, there are many people who are sensitive to eggs. So, in my book, I did go into common food categories such as, and I'm sure you know all of them, like dairy, gluten. Well, eggs, of course, shellfish, they're nightshade vegetables, chocolate, of course, unfortunately, caffeine. So, and a few other groups, because I'm looking at these, what is the mechanism of sensitivity? And for example, since we started talking about eggs, with eggs, so some people, that's good, they just eat eggs and that's good for them. They get protein, they get vitamins, and it's a great source, especially if you're not vegetarian. That's great for you to eat eggs. And yet, we all know about egg allergies, but there is a difference between allergies and sensitivities, which I defined earlier in the book, because with allergies is something that usually comes on very quickly. And we usually know that we're allergic because the symptoms come right away. And unfortunately, the symptoms in some people, as you know, could be quite severe. They could have anaphylaxis, they could pass out, they can have whole body swelling or tongue swelling. And sometimes symptoms could be mild, like a mild rash or mild indigestion type of stuff. But allergies are easier and they go through IgE antibodies. Not that I don't want to get your listeners all into like immunology, but those are IgE antibodies, immunoglobulins that are responsible for allergies. But food sensitivities are much more subtle and they may take up to 72 hours to manifest. So you may be eating eggs every day, but yet you're having migraines every day or you're having this eczema frequently, and you may not be able to connect because with food sensitivities, they're delayed, they're subtle, they're also not consistent because sometimes they can push you, sometimes not, to have the symptom. So, and they work through IgG antibodies for the most part. Sometimes there's IgA, but different immunoglobulins compared to the allergies. So, a lot of times when we talk about food sensitivities, it's sort of, well, I shouldn't use the word exciting, but it is exciting because it's like a discovery. When we test in our clinic, we test people for food sensitivities. It's amazing that we like the patient is always surprised and amazed to find out that because a lot of times what they're sensitive to is what they eat a lot of. And the next question that I wonder if because you eat a lot of certain things, even healthy things, you could be sensitive to, that you become sensitive to that. There's a mechanism for that. You're just, maybe you are overwhelming your body with the same food. So, and so eggs, they're, good food, but could be bad. But food, gluten. Honestly, I can't say good things about gluten in a sense because gluten is not really, it doesn't really add too much to us. But why do we always have gluten? We eat gluten because gluten is part of our food. Like there's everything has gluten in it. Even soy sauce is often has added gluten. And we don't know that. A lot of times we don't even know that. So with gluten, it's more like a negative stigma because for the most part, it's really not a great idea to eat gluten. And all of us, even people who don't have gluten sensitivities, probably would benefit from eating less gluten. So it's very fascinating. So we look at the foods. So, yes, some foods are more bad, but look at chocolate. Chocolate has lots of good properties, but yet there are people who are very sensitive to components of chocolate. So that's what I kind of go over in my book, talking about it. And that's what we do at our clinic too, because every person is different. People are, that's sort of what I love about functional medicine. So you kind of as a physician, you have to use your brains all the time. So it's not like a cookie cutter, oh, the same for this person. So it's not like that. So yeah.
Well, I love that you say that because I mean, I don't think it's a given, actually, to be honest. I'm sure there are some physicians out there that just think, oh, headache, here is this, or stomach ache, here is that, whatever. So recognizing and just also expressing that everybody is different, and nutrition, as you said, hardly anything as individual or individualized as nutrition, in my opinion. And there are so many cultural, emotional, upbringing, whatever factors that play into it. I thought it was very interesting how you said that sometimes it's the foods that we eat on a regular basis where we don't make a connection. I kind of want to highlight that for anybody out there who does have a recurring headache or rash or whatever, just to think about the things that they eat daily. And what I have found also is sometimes people say, oh, but I've eaten that all my life. How could that be this? I never had issues with that, and suddenly it pops up. That's something I hear. Or then, like to your point of sometimes it's quote unquote healthy things that they just eat too much of. So I've had clients, they had ate like 300, 400 grams of broccoli a day or cabbage or so, and then they're wondering why they have SIBO or other things popping up. It's just the quantity, or sometimes even the fact that it's that they eat it raw versus cooked, or like it really depends on, there's so much nuance to it. I do think when it comes to digestion, though, just going back to the point of stress, that stress is really one of the biggest things that's also like impacting the digestion. And then likewise, if we're not absorbing the nutrients properly, if we're not digesting them properly, then it expresses in our skin also. I have found, I don't know if that is something that you address with your clients also, or with your patients also rather.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You're right, because there are many components to that, and some of them honestly are, I would say, no-brainer. For example, I had a patient who ate, like you said, was the broccoli, like who ate a lot of blueberries. And blueberries are wonderful. They're good for like your whole body. However, if you overdo it, you could have a GI side effect. You can actually start having getting heartburn with that. And also you get black stools now, and it's hard to say what's going on. Could you be getting ulcers? So, and that's not a common thing. Like, we don't, in surgery, we don't say, have you eaten lots of blueberries? No, and they're great for you. And those people are outliers who eat so much of a healthy thing. But we have to think about that. That's why we have to ask. It's important to know. And one of the problems in conventional medicine, because I sort of practice both. So I have, both conventional and functional component, like two clinics that sometimes merge and sometimes don't, depending on patients' interests. If they're interested in functional medicine, then I definitely add that, but I don't force it on them. I can have a discussion and recommendation, but I wouldn't sort of go in depth with that. But yeah, it's if they eat habitually certain foods, it doesn't matter that they've eaten them all their lives. That absolutely doesn't matter. And same, by the way, I have to say, with medications. Sometimes people say, oh, I've been on this medication many years. That does not mean that you can't become sensitized or even allergic to it after 10 years of being on the same medication. Unfortunately, that does happen. So we do see that with both. So and to the point that you said, how we eat, right? How we digest. So there is a difference if we are in a hurry, we eat in the car, and we've all been guilty of that, right? Or if you are sitting at home with or a restaurant or with friends, and you have this beautiful utensils and plates and everything is beautiful, that does matter. And it's a slow digestion. You are able to chew your food, not to swallow it. So because actually, one of the components, like, so this sub reasons for leaky gut and indigestion and everything is unchewed food. And I notice sometimes that some people, I mean, especially in surgery, I see that a lot. Some of my colleagues, and like I said, I am not an exception. I don't do that anymore, I hope, but just to swallow food because you're in a hurry. So you just quickly, just basically just swallow it without chewing it properly. And that's a very, very important thing. If you chew food, food properly, you will digest better and you will, in general, will have a better experience. But being stressed out, you can't focus on it. Or being in a hurry, you can't focus on it. So basically transitioning to slowness of life, you know, that's one of the things that, again, it's a challenge for me myself, because you know how we are, most of us, we're like go, go, go. But it's very important to do things, to be able to do things slowly, enjoying, like looking at the nature, the beautiful trees and everything, eating your food, even because I think that I don't know of any studies to quote, but I think if they did a study and you ate some, I don't know, let's say some bad food from, you know, like let's say some kind of like burger. Let's take a burger from McDonald's, right? You eat a burger. If you eat it with slowly, if you chew well, if you enjoy it, then I'm sure the damage would be less than if you just quickly just stuff your mouth with it, because that matters. I'm not encouraging people to keep doing this, but if you compare how is very important. So and that affects our digestion. In our clinic, we do a lot of our fundamental sort of test is a gut test. So we do a test for leaky gut that shows all the bugs and microorganisms, but of course also checks inflammation of the gut and digestive markers. So it's another eye opener. And again, it's almost like you just the patient comes in and they think that actually they don't know what to expect. And then we're sort of going, and it's one layer and then peeling another layer and getting to the core. And when people get better, which is almost always, people may not get better 100%. That's true, because you can't know that. And in some cases, honestly, it's impossible to 100% you cured. No, it just doesn't happen if you had a long-standing chronic problem, rash or joint pain or whatever. So, but everybody gets better to a degree. And when people come in and they say, you know, not only my skin is better, but I actually don't have chronic pain, let's say in my elbow joint that I've had for several years. So that's so nice, because those are the secondary benefits. And in some cases, I didn't even know about those other pains because they forgot to tell me, or I didn't know. I'm like, oh wow, that's great, because it's not just skin or it's not just this. It's all together. It's just I found it that it's easier to have some kind of a constant like anchor, because with the skin you see that, you kind of like you can see that. But I do see patients who like don't have skin problems but have GI issues, like IBS like issues a lot. That's another thing that I like dealing with IBS. I like getting to the bottom of it. So yeah, that's it's a like multifactorial investigation, sort of investigation and treatment.
Yeah, the philosophy or the notion of just slowing down overall is really something that I'm very big on as well. And what you said about how we perceive things and our mindset when we eat certain things is so wonderful, because I think it also just underlines the newer research that's coming up about like placebo, or you know, like if we know, if we think something is good for us versus something bad for us. And that's something that I, for instance, see quite often. Like if people have this inherent belief for whatever reason that, let's say, carbs is the devil, are the devil, or you know, bread is the devil or whatever, and then they eat it and they have that perception of, oh, I'm gonna feel horrible afterwards. It is really hard to unlearn that sometimes if there's not actually a physiological basis for that, or maybe they've had one bad experience and it drags through the entire life. And so there's so much to uncover, as you also mentioned so beautifully, with those wonderful layers. And when it comes to stress, I sometimes think people have the misconception when we say you should slow things down that we mean like overall you need to take speed out of your life, and they're almost afraid that they're not going to be so productive. But what I think is more what's required is the ability to shift in and out of certain states faster. So being able to, yeah, I have a busy day at work, but I'm going to make 15 minutes to eat my lunch in peace and quiet on the balcony, not with my cell phone, and afterwards I can go again, and I'm on the and same thing in the evening, so that we are able to shift in and out of that parasympathetic versus sympathetic nervous system more quickly. So I don't want people to think like, oh, you need to become a yogi and just do nothing all day long and always just eat that beautiful meal and take an hour for that. That I don't think that that's what you're saying, and that's certainly not what I'm saying. But yes, generally speaking, decelerating and eating on the go or eating while going is really one of my pet peeves, where I'm just like, if at all possible, please let's see that we can avoid that, even if it's just, yeah, 3 minutes on a bench that you're taking for yourself. But anyway, I want to shift just a little bit into immune function as we are heading into winter, or many people are already in winter. And so, how is all of that in terms of our digestion, in terms of our skin, linked with immune function? Because I believe that's something that you're kind of touching on in your book as well.
One of the things, just I'll start with the skin and then I'll just extrapolate it to the rest of the body. So one of the things that we see with skin as it gets colder, starting October and then until probably March or April, of course, is dryness. So dryness of the skin. So we see flare-ups of eczema, less so psoriasis, because psoriasis is not directly, it also related to dryness, but indirectly, it's a different immunological condition. But with eczema, we see it all the time when those flare-ups become worse. So I think that drinking enough liquids and moisturizing helps. Of course, a lot of the dryness, it also comes from the fact that we need more, to take in. But yet I am of the school that you don't need to over drink it, over hydrate, because I sometimes see people with these huge water bottles, and if you are not thirsty, then you should not force yourself. Yet I can contradict myself and say that sometimes when you fast and your life is fast, you may not feel thirst. So so you have to kind of be tuned in with yourself, because for some people I know they forget to even feel thirsty. They are not in tune with their bodies to feel thirst, but it's very important to hydrate. Another thing that I touch upon in my book as well is the usage of multivitamins in general, supplements, because very often people ask me, they say, well, should everybody take vitamins? So if you are young, let's say you're in your 20s, let's say early 20s, and you eat healthy, you really eat lots of fruits and vegetables, you're exercising, you have a good life, you exercise, you sleep, I don't think you need any supplements, because at that point, if you are a healthy person, you're able to digest the foods that you eat, and you're exercising, you're doing everything for you, so for yourself. So I don't think that it's absolutely necessary. There has to be an indication. However, as we grow older, and older again is relative, some person at 30 could be older, somebody could be like 45 could be older, so who knows? Somebody could be 70 older. There are some people who are much younger, their body is much younger than how they look, and vice versa. So what happened is that we are unable to absorb all the nutrients. So even if somebody eats really a healthy diet and they're doing everything right, their just ability to absorb may not be sufficient. So they do need to supplement. So that's why most people arbitrarily, after the age, let's say 35, 40, do need some supplements. And especially in the winter, where there's less of, first of all, vitamin D, of course, because vitamin D for most people, especially in a northeast, it's all year round, of course, but in the winter especially, because vitamin D gives you, as one of my patients said that actually, she said you can encourage people to take vitamin D because it makes you energetic. And that will sort of be, and I think she's right, because it has tons of benefits. It's protective with some cancers, and it's important for your bones, for your endocrine, for parathyroid, etc. So, but just to say that it gives you lots of energy. And in winter, where people tend to sometimes get more depressed and light deprived, etc., seasonal affective disorder, etc., so vitamin D is very important. But if you look at many other vitamins, like vitamin C, most people do get enough from from foods they eat, but some people don't. Another one, which is actually being addressed in a sort of Western medicine, more or less, I see more and more older patients on vitamin B12. B12 is very, very important, and we do see some depletion of B12 in people who are on many of chronic medications. I actually have a video about that, about Prilosec, that how it affects our body system and depletes us of certain vitamins, and that's true of other proton pump inhibitors. They are good because the proton pump inhibitors, they do have their positive function, of course, so I'm not knocking them down, but unfortunately they do have negative side effects too, and that's one of them. So, and again, approach to these vitamins, multivitamins from immunological standpoint. So what does your body need? It has to be personalized. Again, somebody who's elderly probably would benefit from multivitamins, but we do in functional medicine run tests that check your micronutrients, which are minerals and vitamins inside of the cell. And one of the, for example, big thing that I deal with sometimes is thinning hair or hair loss and insufficient zinc, because people sometimes don't have enough zinc, and that's a one, especially I have to say, I've noticed that in people who are doing intermittent fasting. So I've had patients who actually deficient on in zinc because of that. So again, it's a personalized approach. Winter, yes, winter often brings up sort of not the worst, but brings up our chronic problems more to the surface. So, but again, like certain things such as just taking, if you don't want to do personalized testing because sometimes it could be expensive and all that, so just taking multivitamins, making sure you take vitamin D, take drink fluids, don't let yourself get dehydrated. Very basic things that we all should be doing, but sometimes we forget.
Yes, unfortunately, we're all guilty of that from time to time. But thank you. That's really helpful in terms of what micronutrients to look out for. And just to kind of round it off, I know we said individualized approach, always the best, get tested, et cetera, always the best. But nonetheless, are there certain foods, let's say somewhere between 5 to 10 foods, where you say those are amazing foods for your skin and, of course, for the rest of the body as well? You mentioned eggs, for example, you mentioned blueberries. What would be some other foods you would be like, well, I think most people, if eaten in moderation, would really benefit from XYZ?
So, I would say probably by category. So, number one category, which is very important, is protein. And that could be, as you know, again, nothing original that I'm going to say here, is that in people who are vegetarian, sometimes they're just not getting enough protein. It's, of course, possible because there's, you can eat protein in beans and a lot of legumes. So, it's not, but sometimes, again, it's just the diet is not inclusive of that. So if you don't get protein, because collagen in our skin, I have the whole, I think that several pages in the book dedicated to that, because with collagen, if you it's most actually ubiquitous protein in your body. And if you don't have enough collagen, then forget about other aspects of your skin, because your skin will not necessarily that you would have acne or, I don't know, rashes, but your skin will not have that dewy, glowy appearance because it will start losing its elasticity, lo losing its like a recoil. So proteins are very, very important. So to start with that, and ideal proteins if you're not a vegetarian is chicken, fish, and sometimes red meat. I know that's a kind of controversial, and it's always good not to overeat on red meat, but occasional red meat is not a bad idea. So, and the other group, of course, fruits and vegetables. So, something like strawberries and blueberries, those colorful, beautiful beautiful fruits and vegetables. One of sort of underrated, a lot of people don't know, is pomegranates. Pomegranates are amazing, not only for the skin, they're good for your heart, and just amazing. Another fruit, vegetable actually, that I love. It's good again for the heart, but it's also used good for everything because it's all connected. It's good for your how your body deals with oxidative stress is beets. Beets are again underrated because a lot of times people don't talk about that. I do have to single out from the vegetable section cruciferous vegetables such as broccoli, cauliflower. They are extremely important for detoxification in our liver because if you don't have a good detox, then yeah, you're going to have a whatever, some rash, and starting with the skin and ending with other issues. And interestingly, that a lot of times I see people whose diet is essentially meat and potatoes or pasta and meat, and they come in to me, older patients, and they say, "Well, I've never had a bad skin, and now I do." And they always blame their hormones. And of course, that's true to a degree, yes, because estrogen, I'm talking about women, estrogen is protective, like normal level of estrogen, not over too much estrogen, but normal level of estrogen, it does give you that youthful look. It helps with collagen production and everything else. But yet to blame just hormones, that's just not right. Because if you're eating certain things every day, and if you think that the vegetables are, I don't know, like green beans, boiled green beans are vegetables, that's not enough. That's a vegetable, but it's truly not enough. I think that eating vegetables in a salad or as a smoothie or a juice, that's very, very helpful. So with these, so the protein and protein, fruits, vegetables, and I do have sort of categories in my book going into different supplements and different vitamins. But what I would like to stress out that the first part, the most important part is food, because it's so easy just to take a supplement, just because it's easy to take in, but it's much harder to change your dietary habits. And that's where some people, when they inquire about functional medicine, I always tell them, it's a journey. It's not like a quick fix. And you and I, we are partners. I'm not like a paternalistic doctor. Yes, I can write you things, recommendations and stuff, but if you don't do it for yourself, it's just not going to work out. So the diet is the core, like a good diet with minimizing, of course, or not making simple carbs only at a special occasion. Like if you eat a cake or some sweets, sure, eat it. Just eat a small component. Don't eat the whole slice of a cake. Eat, like, I have a video about that because I thought about it. Like, can you get away with that? Yes, you can get away with that. Let's say once every couple of months you're going someplace and you eat just 30%. Don't eat the whole thing because otherwise you feel deprived. Because if you want to, you're at the party and you're not the only one standing there not eating. Psychologically, it may be hard. So things like that. But diet comes first, and then all other supplements, more personalized, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really like your attitude, your mindset towards all of this and how you approach your clients as well, making sure that they have a long-term mindset, that they know it's habit change essentially, isn't it? It's not just we're gonna do this elimination diet and then after that you can go back to how you were eating before. No, it is making small changes but continuously, and I like how you're focusing on what to add, as opposed to just telling people, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat this, because then at the end of the day, they're left with, okay, what should I eat? And also, you said the focus is food, and I really want to highlight that because to me, that implies that whole food, actual food, not what they call like Frankenfoods, all the processed things, where sometimes when you go through the supermarket, you're like, none of this is actual food, all of this is manufactured. So let us focus on food, on the whole foods, on the stress management, on the hydration, all of that, everything that comes with it. So, yeah, really, really wonderful. Thank you so much for explaining a lot of great things to us and for giving us just a small insight into your book. I'm of course going to link the Clear Skin Diet book in the show notes and all your details, the connection to your lab as well, especially since you also work with people remotely, so not just people in Connecticut, which I think is a wonderful news. But yeah, thank you so much for your time. I really, really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you very much. I truly enjoyed talking to you. Your questions were very interesting for me, well, because maybe I love this topic. So, and yes, my clinic, I'm in Massachusetts. So I hold licenses in state of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Vermont. So I can only see, of course, patients from those three states remotely. But again, thank you very much. I truly enjoyed talking. It's a wonderful topic, and I so enjoy you talking with like-minded people. It's a true joy. Thank
Absolutely.
you.
Thank you, Maria. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Maria. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And one more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.